All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt joined now in studio by Gabe Polsky, director of Red Penguins, which will be at the Toronto International Film Festival Saturday, September 14th. It'll be showing at 6:30 p.m.
Beyond, actually, we should talk about this. So beyond TIFF, when people want to see this film after they're hearing you talk about it, where are they going to be able to see it?
Well, I hope in theaters, you know, in Canada. Right now, it's sort of a unique situation where, you know, I made the film independently and, you know, I got some German money. But, you know, I'm here basically as a platform to sell the film.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a sales title.
So maybe a theatrical release.
And, yeah.
Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, stay tuned.
Yeah.
It's a great film, by the way. It's a total
blast. Yeah, we were.
Jeff and I had a lot of fun watching this.
Yeah, I went back couple of times and replayed some things. I'm not going to think. There's a Vicks commercial with Victor Tikhonov. That's just
who knew.
Well, I don't know why. It's just kind of got my attention over and over and over again. I wanted to ask you. Did Red Army? You did In Search of Greatness. Did this project come as a result of stuff you found out working on either of those two projects?
Well, sort of. I mean, when I was promoting Red Army, basically, at the festivals, this guy, Steve Warshaw, who's in the film, came up to me after one of the screenings and started pitching this crazy story that he had about this Red Army team. And I basically kind of stopped him in his tracks and said, whoa, dude, like, I'm not interested in Russia anymore or Russian hockey. You know, I did that. It's also kind of hard to follow the film, a film like that was very successful.
Right.
And, it's a little bit dangerous. And I just said, look, I'm not interested in this. He said, well, can I have your address? I'll just send you some things about it because it looks like you don't really know anything about it. So I did give him my address. He sent me a huge box of materials, like with, you know, videos and contracts. Basically, the guy is a hoarder, right? So he's been hoarding, like, who knows, like rooms filled with stuff, right? And I just had it in my house for months and months, and I never looked at it. And finally, my wife was like, you know, purging, you know, throwing everything away. And she said, what is this? You know, and I kind of felt bad at throwing this away because the guy clearly put a lot of time into it. And so I started looking through it and I was just like mind blown, like how this could have happened, how I didn't know anything about it. And not just that, but just how crazy it was. When I started looking through the videos, basically, you know, the whole premise of the idea that this Red Army team, that one of the greatest in history, basically was bankrupt and had an NHL team by them. You know, this is a military-run team. It was a national pride of Russia. How could they let Americans basically do this, you know?
Steve and I talked about this. Like, we were in the industry then. Gabe, I had no idea about this.
And it's weird because, you know, you see, because Howard Baldwin's like on the Today Show, right? Like, there's clips in the film where you say, and this was publicized. It did
get
publicized.
Oh, yeah, Al Gore's talking about what a great, you know, great example of American involvement in the new Russian economy.
Yeah. This was like what people pointed to as like the success story in Russia in the 90s, which is interesting. But what was going on actually behind the scenes that people didn't know about was a lot of shady stuff,
so
that they didn't want people to know about.
So the short version, so the Soviet Union is collapsing. You know, the Red Army, the great Soviet hockey team, everybody here will know about them. And the owners of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And so this is the Mario Pittsburgh Penguins, two-time Stanley Cup champions, decide to invest in Red Army, which is essentially, bankrupt. They can't buy it because you can't buy Red Army, but they can invest in the Wild West that is...
They own 50%, right?
But although it's kind of hard to claim that equity, right? They don't really play by the rules over there. So,
and Mario Lemieux actually personally invested in this, as long as Michael J. Fox. And
what was the idea, Gabe? So what were they investing? What were they doing it? Why were they doing it?
I think that for two reasons. One is they actually thought that they would, you know, make money. A lot of companies, you know, big companies like Pizza Hut and, you know, we find Disney. You know, big companies were going to Russia. They thought, you know, okay, now's the time. We got to get in early. And investing in Russian businesses, they said, you know, the resources and people, right? So they want to get their brand out there. And that was one reason is, you know, there was money to make. The second reason is because they thought that they would get an early look at, you know, the young players coming out of Russia. So all the older players were playing in the NHL, and really there was kind of a wasteland, a hockey wasteland at the time, because it was all young players. Mm-hmm. And so that was so because the other teams weren't really sending. There wasn't great scouting systems in Russia at that time. And
this is pre-KHL, yeah, isn't it? Yeah. This is pre-KHL for people.
So they're thinking, we get the inside track. Yeah, we'll get some players. Exactly. And so the guy they send in, you mentioned him already, is the Steve Warshaw character.
Sorry, I'm just laughing. At it.
Yeah, because he is a character from fiction. But explain who he is.
Well, he was basically the marketing guy that Pittsburgh hired to oversee this venture. And so he was the guy that was crazy enough to actually go over there. And be kind of the guy on the ground. And he's this very eccentric kind of Woody Allen guy that has like a million ideas. You know those guys that have so many ideas and they test them out and like half of them don't work and half of them are crazy. But in Russia at the time, the Wild East, like anything was possible. So it was a perfect place for a guy like Steve to test out all these crazy ideas. You know, and he's just... You know, they describe him as like a weird little bastard, and he is. But if you can imagine like an old communist Russian, like this older generation who hasn't even seen normal Americans, let alone a guy like Steve Warshaw, that like their heads were spinning when he came over there and was like introducing these crazy marketing ideas and trying to bring capitalism. They've never even heard of business before, really. Right. It was all state-owned, you know, so that no one had run a business themselves, you know.
Were you surprised as you got into this about the darker side of it? Like, clearly you had to have an understanding of business in Russia from your previous, from Red Army. But the more you got into this, were you surprised at just how black it was, how bleak it was?
I was surprised. I mean, clearly, if it was all just good, there wouldn't really be a story, so right. I wouldn't have really engaged in it. I knew that there was just a, you know... a lot of shady stuff. There's, you know, murder. There had been an article, I think, in Penthouse about this sort of alluded to all this. But yeah, when I went there, I started learning more and more kind of what was going on in the dark side of everything. And it's the stealing and the, you know, the cheating, the way the mafia was so pervasive and mysterious there, just lurking behind
the
any
tax
success.
Police was my favorite.
Yeah, the tax police is just another word for it. You know, where they could show up at your door anytime, guy with machine gun and a bag, you know, empty bag, and just basically they won't leave your office until you wire money, basically.
But it starts out like it's fun, right? You have this crazy this Steve Warshaw guy who is a hustler, and as you say, he can try anything and do anything. The system is completely broken down. So, and no one's going to hockey games. No one's going to see Red Army. The place is empty, and so it's open season for him. So he, you know, the strippers in the arena and
bears,
you know, yeah, and the bears, the circus bears, and it before it turns sour, you know, and you know before a lot of things turn sour in the old Soviet Union at that point. Like he's having a ball, right? He's living the life, and you kind of get a hint of what his personal life might have been like.
Just a hint.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was a window of time at that time where everybody was kind of optimistic, and the country was just sort of seeing freedom for the first time, and everyone was super excited. And this was a place where people learned that they could go to just like party, basically. And Steve just made a huge show of it. It's a business case study on how to fill buildings, you know, with no rules. There was no rules.
Selling beer to 14-year-olds, right?
Yeah, like that. Yeah, I mean, that's easy. That's a little bit cheating, but yeah. So it was crazy. I mean, even for NHL, you know, even for the NHL, like how to. A lot of times they sort of lean on marketing. If you don't mm-hmm. have a great team, how do you get people to come? You know, there's no hockey. There's very little to see.
Bring out the dancing bears.
Yeah. And talk about how embarrassing it must have been for Viktor Tikhonov, who's used to kind of the greatest players ever.
Oh, yeah.
To kind of going, and then all of a sudden he's got player, you know, terrible hockey players, you know, and then there's a huge show and all this crazy capitalism, which is what it, you know, communists hated.
And he's a colonel in the Soviet Army, right? Yeah. Like he's literally a military.
And then
guy.
The Americans are coming to basically save the whole thing from falling apart. It's the biggest humiliation had to have been for a guy like that.
Steve Warshaw side, who's the character you came away feeling most fond of?
In the movie?
In the movie, yeah. As just on a personal level. Was there somebody you
came
away?
Well, I think it was interesting. You know, the guy, there's a guy on Interpol's 10 Most Wanted. So he was on the same list as Osama bin Laden, and a producer I had in Russia basically found this guy. And I was like, dude, are you sure we should, you know, I don't know. I was like, he's like, no, just come on. Let's go to his restaurant. We show up at his restaurant. He's the only guy there. This is like during lunchtime in this huge, beautiful restaurant. And I thought it was, you know, I was a little nervous, but he turned out to be like, you know, like a teddy bear, like mm-hmm. really nice, fed us anything you want. Just, but you know how that.
Yes. I'm no fool.
And maybe I don't know like the specifics of what he was doing. There's a lot of allegations, but I was surprised at how hospitable he was. But anyways, Steve is a guy that I call. Steve's the main character. And I call Steve every so often if I'm feeling down, just because he's seen the worst in life and the world. So I don't know. He's just hilarious. So
well it's amazing how he doesn't seem, you know, he is undaunted throughout, right? Until the moment where he's got to get out of there because they're going to kill him.
Yeah.
He's
But there's a reference in the movie where it's said that he was paranoid of the Russian mafia, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and
yeah.
Paranoid. It's not paranoia if it's true.
Yeah, I was going to say paranoid's the wrong word. He was extremely aware of the presence of the Russian mafia, shall we say.
He is a little bit of a naive. Well, that's what makes him so kind of interesting and funny. He's very naive and he's kind of a romantic, mm-hmm. you know. So he like wants things to work out. He fell in love with the Russians, with the culture. But then, even though it's like falling in love with an abusive, right. I don't know, person.
I can ask you about one other element in the film because it does kind of jump out. So at one point during this adventure, Disney's going to buy in. So we got the Mighty Ducks have happened. They bought the Mighty Ducks in Anaheim. The movies have happened. And the idea is that this is a great marketing opportunity for Disney in Russia. And they're going to jump into this. And then things go haywire. And there's no Disney and no Disney monies, which would have been the last kind of salvation. And then you go to try and get Michael Eisner, the former head of Disney, to talk about it. And strangely enough, they pretend that never existed, that it never happened. There was never anything. What's going on there?
You know, I actually met Michael a couple times and you know, he was very nice, at least when I met him. And you know, and I was hounding him to talk to me about this, go on camera. And I never got a call back. He you know, basically then I asked his assistant, look, this is the Russian Penguins. You know, he was involved and I have documents and stuff. And she called me back and basically said, you know, Michael said, you know, he doesn't know anything about this. He must have maybe had one call with Howard Baldwin, but you know, he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
I think it's just mystery. There's a lot of mysteries in this film and including the murders.
Yeah.
That's part of kind of, I think, the Russian culture. But as far as Eisner, I mean, if I were to guess, I think he just, because it would never happened and wasn't, and got a little shady. He just doesn't want to be associated.
Better not have it on the CV somewhere.
Now I don't feel so bad. I was unaware of it. Michael Eisner wasn't aware of it either, and he apparently.
I think he was pretty aware.
It's just like Donald Trump, sure he was. You know?
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Completely.
No idea that was happening. Yeah.
Completely unaware of things. When this was done and you sat down and you looked at the finished product, what did it tell you about Russia?
Well, country. I mean, I guess what I was focused on in making the film is that I feel like we get a lot of facts and kind of allegations about Russia and sort of America. But I wanted to focus on like the behaviors and psychology mm-hmm. of the people, how they react, how they deeper. I want, you know, going to Russia, sitting down with obviously people associated with this, but more human kind of understanding of where they're coming from. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be like, you don't necessarily learn nameable things like mm-hmm. It's not facts, it's more you understand more of the culture and behavior and the cultural, I guess, differences and where we come from and where they come from, and then I think the audience can make their own kind of assessment about it.
Yeah.
You know, but studying the behavior and psychology. Because I think through this story, through experiencing it, you have a better understanding just inherently. I don't know if you guys felt that.
Yeah, because the backdrop, you know, the collapse of the Soviet Union, the chaos, the kind of giddy chaos, and you know, the first experiment with capitalism and with democracy to a degree, and then you see Yeltsin, you know, standing on top of the tank and essentially deteriorating before your eyes to the end, and of course Putin arrives. You know, that line is the line that's, you know, the historic line that's going behind this piece, right? And that, you know, that's where I kind of linked the culture.
I mean, it couldn't go on like that much longer.
No.
You know,
no.
I mean, I don't think the people could take it, you know, the craziness and, yeah. you know, lack of order. And also, I mean, even I think specifically as soon as a country, as soon as companies start getting a lot of success, like even if it was like Exxon, the Russians would never let Exxon like become the owner of all the oil of the company. I mean, in the country, you know what I'm saying? As soon as someone got too successful, it's a threat.
So somebody's going to tap you on the shoulder and say
now thanks for helping us and whatever. But
there's a great line. There's a great line about from one of the, I don't know if it's Gushev, the line about, you know, we have a democracy. It's just not, I don't know if that's
a character. Yeah, that was the Interpol.
Yeah, Interpol guy, yeah. We have a democracy. It's just maybe not your democracy.
It's,
you know, the thing too I found, because you talk about sort of the way it was kind of the Wild West and then how Putin sort of brought it, but, you know, I guess sort of resembles order. The hockey team in a lot of ways is kind of a, It just reflects that, like how things are just spiraling out of control and the Red Army team is sort of susceptible to anything. And along comes this guy, and it really is kind of a microcosm of an economy or a country trying to deal with rapid influx of free enterprise.
We got just a minute here. What's Steve Warshaw doing now? Because you really want to know if you watch this film.
He was actually working very recently at Madison Square Garden. Kind of as a floor manager, which, by the way, he's got millions of crazy stories there. But now he is...
That doesn't surprise me.
He said that he's basically representing the marketing interests of Artemi Panarin. That's what he's...
The marketing interests of Artemi Panarin, which sounds like a poem.
It does. Gabe, thanks so much for joining us. It's great.
Again, congrats on the film.
So, yes, congratulations. September 14th, 6:30 p.m. at Scotiabank Theater. Gabe Polsky, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.